You're listening to SBS News.
Sydney lawyer Sean Kim says the United States-North Korea summit is a dream come true. There's not only much at stake politically, but for the committee member of Sydney's Korean society, it's deeply personal.
My father was born in North Korea, who fled to South Korea during the Korean War. So it has personal meanings to me as well. For people like my father, they can go back to their homeland, to their birthplace, and revisit the country. You know, positive things like that will happen.
Mr. Kim is not the only one optimistic among his Korean friends in Australia that the historic diplomatic event will pave the way for reunification between the two Koreas.
Everyone I know here is very excited. It's a news that everyone follows on a daily basis, and we discuss about it every day. Because it's a life-changing event. It's groundbreaking, but it's also a history-making event.
And it's not just Australia's Korean community paying close attention. Brisbane retiree Raymond Ferguson's two friendship medals from North Korea are among his most prized possessions. During his 14 trips to the mysterious country, he's attended celebrations, meetings, and visited schools, hospitals, and a nursing home.
And I was so impressed and taken aback by the facilities and the treatment that the old-aged people in the DPRK in Pyongyang were receiving. It really amazed me, and I thought, well, we can learn a lot.
Mr. Ferguson is secretary of the DPRK Australia Friendship Group and has noticed a rapid increase in interest in the Hermit Kingdom in recent years.
It gives me an indication that that the hostility by the average Australian is seen against the DPRK is reducing, and there's more interest about learning about the country.
But few share such a positive view as Mr. Ferguson of the closed and depressive state. Former High Court Judge Michael Kirby headed a United Nations investigation into human rights abuses in North Korea in 2014. Before then, he says he knew little more than the average educated Australian.
The situation was much more shocking than I had expected. In fact, I had to sit there day after day because we conducted public hearings and we had ordinary people coming along telling us what had happened to them. I felt as if I was back in time, back in the period immediately after the Second World War, when international military tribunals and other investigations were conducted of the Nazi horrors.
Kim Jong-un's nuclear capacity may be top of the agenda for the United States, but Justice Kirby says human rights shouldn't be forgotten.
But as one of the refugees from North Korea said just this week, if you don't have a human rights respecting regime in North Korea, how can you respect the deal that they make? How can you be sure that that deal will be fulfilled?
The conditions in a country isolated by crippling international economic sanctions have led thousands to escape. While about 30,000 now live in South Korea, a small number of defectors have made their way to Australia. UNHCR data shows that between 2001 and 2015, 159 North Koreans applied for refugee settlement visas in Australia. 33 were successful. The Department of Home Affairs says there have been no applications since 2016. Of those who have settled in South Korea, 5 are selected each year for a scholarship to study English through a program run by the University of Technology, Sydney. Bronwyn Dalton was instrumental in setting up the program and says it's a diplomatic success.
In the event of unification or any other developments, we have basically exposed the up-and-coming talent of the North Korean diaspora to Australia. So it's a great win.
She hopes the high-level discussions between Kim Jong-un and world leaders will lead to greater engagement and encourage other institutions to form connections with North Koreans.
Engagement is the only option. We've had hawkish policies, we've had sanctions and so on. They don't work. It's the engagement, and especially humanising, giving a human face to North Korea. That is our biggest protector against war.
Michael Kirby agrees it's better that the leaders are talking rather than maintaining what he describes as the infantile, silent treatment policy of the past.
I think that's a definite step in the right direction, but it depends on what they're talking about, and it depends on their willingness to take time to work around the periphery and ultimately to get to the really hard cards in the pack: human rights, nuclear weapons.
Rosemary Bulger, SBS World News.
If you enjoyed this, you can find more SBS features on our website or from your favourite podcaster like iTunes, Spotify, Acast, Stitcher or Wooshka.